CTV.
Welcome to Friday at the end of the week here. And we're going to see Paul now in the book of Philippians getting practical on us.
I know.
This is not as exciting as Paul getting doctrinal on us. We all like to sit at the Lord's feet and suck up the teaching, the doctrine, understand our calling. But you will find in all of Paul's letters, after he teaches, he exhorts the saints to walk worthily of the calling. People get nervous whenever Paul does this. Paul is not bringing us back to law. He's not saying do this or else. That was the law. The law was do this or else. Now, Paul wants the saints to walk well. He doesn't want them, you know, going crazy, sinning. I mean, what's the guy supposed to say? Everybody go sin. No, he's not going to say that. But when he tells people don't sin, then some of you get nervous. Oh, why is Paul telling us not to sin? I thought this was a gospel of grace. Yeah, it is a gospel of grace. But again, what's the opposite of saying don't sin? Sin? Paul says, of course, in Romans 5:20, where sin increases, grace superabounds. Then he quickly adds in Romans 6:1, should we then be sinning more so that more grace could come? Well, that's exactly what would happen. If you sin more, more grace comes. You remember my analogy? I think it was pretty helpful. Think of sin as a water under a boat, grace as the boat. As the water rises, the boat rises with it. You can't swamp it. You can't swamp the grace of God. But then Paul says grace super exceeds. So it doesn't just rise to the occasion of sin. It super abounds. So my analogy was the boat becomes an airplane. This is truth. Nevertheless, Paul says, don't be so stupid that you purposely sin more to see how much grace God can give you. If you do sin more, God will give grace because Romans 5:20 is true. But so many people use Romans 6:1 to eliminate 5:20 as if 5:20 never existed. Well, Paul says don't sin. That means there's no grace. No, it just means he doesn't want us conducting grace experiments. The experiments will work every time. You can't out-sin grace. It's impossible. That very knowledge will, in fact, curb the flesh. It's the only thing that has a chance of curbing the flesh. The law certainly does not. So now Paul's going to get practical on him. So that, my beloved, remember we ended yesterday with this magnificent statement that at the name of Jesus, every knee should be bowing, celestial and terrestrial and subterranean, and every tongue should be acclaiming that Jesus Christ is Lord for the glory of God the Father. A parallel passage would be Colossians 1:16-20. That because of the blood of the cross, God will reconcile all things in heaven and earth to himself. And when God says earth, it does include the subterranean, because those beings that are now kept in the subterranean prison, they're still on the earth. So there's two realms, heaven and earth, but in Philippians 2, verse 12, we got more specific yet, that there's another category of the earth, and that is those things under the earth. We, for the most part, are walking on top of the earth, unless you're a coal miner, in which case, God help you. Somebody's got to do it, though. So that, my beloved, and Paul is always basing his exhortations to behave. He's always basing them on the revelation that went before. So that. It makes reference to what went before. Because of this great truth that God's going to save everyone. See, Paul's not making salvation contingent upon behavior. That's the law. This isn't law, this is grace. So that, my beloved, according as you always obey, I got to talk about that word. Don't get nervous. Oh my God, Harold, now we got to obey. Yeah, Maud, you do. But it's not obedience as we think of it. Okay, I'll get into it now. It's a two-part Greek word. The elements are under here. UNDER/here, to here. HEAR. Can't think of the Greek word right now. I'll write it down here. The Concordant Dictionary in the back of the Concordant Literal New Testament defines it as to hear and to heed. To hear, to obey is just hear what the person is saying, in this case Paul, and then heeding it. But you notice Paul doesn't say if you don't heed it, you'll be stoned. If you don't heed it, you'll be burned with fire. No, he just says, and he's even assuming that they are doing it. Watch. So that, my beloved, according as you always obey, I mean, I'm sure he's thinking to himself, this isn't literally true. They don't always hear and heed what I'm telling them. But he's giving them the benefit of the doubt. Very gracious thing for him to do. As you always obey, not as in my presence only, but now much rather in my absence, he's giving them the benefit of the doubt here too. Because in Paul's presence, everybody would be decorous. Everyone would be presenting their best selves. Paul's coming over. Oh, quick. Hide the magazines. Turn off the television. Get rid of the video games. Paul's coming over. Clean the house. Comb your hair. I mean, I can see it. I can see why you would want to do that. But Paul, again, is giving them the benefit of the doubt. He is saying here that there's a difference between his presence and his absence. It's like the teacher. When the teacher leaves the classroom, what happens? Generally speaking. Well, I know what happened in my classroom because I was the instigator most of the time. As soon as the teacher left, all hell would break loose. I would play. I had a harmonica. Well, in grade school, we sat at these desks that had the metal sides, and as soon as the teacher left, I would always play the drums. I would entertain my class. I would do this beat on the bottom of the desk and the top. And people would be entertained. They loved it. I did not hear and heed the teacher when the teacher was out of the classroom. And in high school, I had a harmonica. I was famous for playing Turkey in the Straw. Yeah. So don't use me as an example here. According as you always obey, not as in my presence only, but now much rather in my absence, with fear and trembling. Okay, again, fear is not the fear of being afraid of what Paul's going to do to them when they come, or being afraid of God or Christ. It's fear of respect, of being in awe of the calling and wanting to walk worthy of the calling. It's the fear of awe. Like Vanessa said a couple days ago, this calling is the most, what word did she use again? Not significant, but heavy, weighty, wonderful. I need a thesaurus. Knowing that, let's walk in accord with that revelation. I exhort you, I exhort myself. Fear and trembling. We take this seriously. It's not the trembling of being in the corner shaking like you do in a thunderstorm or a tornado or a hurricane. It's not that. Now, here's a great verse. I've quoted this many times. Much rather, in my absence, with fear and trembling, be carrying your own salvation into effect. Oh, wow. This is getting worse, Martin. It's getting worse every time you bring us a new sentence from this freaking book of Philippians. Well, be carrying your own salvation into effect. Let me finish it. For it is God who is operating in you to will as well as to work for the sake of his delight. Do you know what some people say about me because I teach against human free will because it's not a scriptural doctrine? They say lots of things. Oh, you're saying we're only robots. And you're saying we're only puppets. That's what the accusation I get. And I always say, no, it's actually worse, we're clay. But I'm not a piece of clay. Obviously, I have bones and flesh and Clay doesn't have this. I'm referencing Romans chapter 9. God's the potter, we're the clay. What God is saying in Romans chapter 9 is that God can manipulate the human body with bones and flesh and eyes, mouth, ears, nose. He can manipulate as easily as a potter manipulates clay. That's the he's making an analogy. He's not saying that you are literally clay, even though really you break down the human elements. We come from the soil. You can actually say that. But he's saying, you see how a potter works the clay and how the clay is inert and God makes it what he wants to make it. And the potter makes the clay what he wants to make it. Y'all. All right. Well, guess what? God can and does work humans in the same way a potter works clay. It's an analogy. It's a freaking metaphor. We're not literally clay. We're not literally robots. We're not literally puppets. But it's like that. I mentioned the word puppets. People hate that word. I mention it here because look at this. This is a relative and the absolute in one statement. Be carrying your own salvation into effect. That is, exhort one another, remind one another how we should be walking, encourage one another. When somebody asks you if they think they should divorce their wife, you say, no, don't do it. Or they ask you if they should rob a bank. No, don't do it. Should I kill my mother? I really don't like her. No, don't do it. This is be carrying your own salvation. It's a relative salvation. You're not carrying your aeonian salvation. You have to look at the context. In another place, Paul says women are saved through the childbearing. What? A woman can't have aeonian life unless she has a baby? No, you have to look at the salvation of the context. And the salvation of the context here is to be living a life that will save you from lots of trouble. You want to be saved from jail? You want to be saved from death, dismemberment, and destruction? Then, you know, obey the law and walk a good life. God will enable you to do that. And that's where the second part of this verse comes in. Be carrying your own salvation into effect. For, now Paul says, Paul's realizing that the people are going to freak out by this time. By this time, you might even be freaking out. He's already said, according as you always obey. Then he says, obey with fear and trembling. Then he says, carry your own salvation into effect. People are going, is this guy the new Moses? Feels like the law. What is this? Grade school? And then Paul finally comforts people by saying, for it is God who is operating in you to will and to work. To will, that is to decide things, and to work, that is to carry out the things you've decided. People say, well, yes, God directs a man's steps, but a man's thoughts are his own. You can plan anything you want. God will just stop you from doing it. No, not true. God controls the will also. He controls the mind. He controls the thinking. For it is God operating. The Spirit of God makes his home in you, and it really makes its home in everyone because no one can stand on their two feet except by the power of God. It is God who is operating in you to will as well as to work for the sake of his delight. Operating in you. I'm sorry, but this sounds a lot like a puppet. The hand is operating inside the puppet to cause it to will and to work in accord with the delight of the one operating the puppet. Am I saying we're puppets? In a way, yeah, damn straight. Damn straight we are. God is operating in us to will and to work for the sake of his delight. What is that? Except God's pulling the strings. God's animating these clay figures as easily as a potter animates clay. Makes it what he wants, whether a vessel of honor or a vessel of dishonor. This is God's operation. And this is one of the rare verses where Paul unveils the absolute viewpoints, God operating in you. So if you're obeying, if you're hearing and heeding my words, Paul says, then it's God operating in you to will and to work. If you're not heeding my words, if when I leave town, you start gallivanting and partying and generally, which neither one are sins, but let's say when I leave town, you start murdering people, stealing from your neighbor. Well, God is operating in you to will and to work. It's still God operating in you because God creates vessels of honor and dishonor. We're not vessels of dishonor, folks. Don't misunderstand me. Even though on occasion we may do dishonorable things, we're not vessels of dishonor. That doesn't define us. We're vessels of honor. We're members of the body of Christ, for crying out loud. But even members of the body of Christ fail. And we even will to fail. We even decide to do bad things, and we do them. This is still God operating in us to will and to work. And it's ultimately for the sake of His delight. I wrote a book called Flawed by Design. Our flaws keep us weak and keep us needing God. God puts this treasure in earthen vessels. It's 2 Corinthians 4:7. God puts His treasure in earthen vessels that the glory may be of Him and not of us. I'm walking a delicate line here between the absolute and the relative. I can't tell you, well, you just do whatever you want because God's operating in you. I can't tell you that. But it's true that God is operating in you, and nothing you can do is outside of God's will. Just like I'm not going to tell you to sin. I'm going to tell you, don't sin. Don't do it. You'll cause yourself trouble. Don't kill your mother. And things like that. Or anyone else for that matter. It is God operating in you to will as well as to work for the sake of His delight. And then Paul says this in verse 14. All be doing without murmuring and reasonings. Oh, reasonings. I gotta end with this. I'm looking at my time here. I wanted to get all the way through verse 18, but that's not going to happen. All be doing without murmurings and reasonings. I'm going to read the end of verse 14, then I'll comment, then I'll go for the week. I know you're sad. I'm sad too, but I'll be back on Monday and watch for another Rodney Parris Martin Zender special on Sunday and a classic that will be published on Saturday. And I'm still going to put out the rest of the Richmond videos. I know there's still more to come. I have 3 more talks I have not published. And I'm going to republish what I've already published on Rumble, going to republish it on YouTube so more people will see it. So that's coming. Don't worry. But I know I just wanted to talk to you. I couldn't just come back from my week, my forced exile. I couldn't come back and just run conference videos. I needed to reconnect with you. I needed to talk to you. And I think you needed it too. But they're coming. Don't worry. Because a great talk by Mark Haukes, great testimony. Other people gave their testimonies. And so I don't want you to miss that. Waylon Dabbs, great message at the end of the conference. It's coming. It's coming. For it is God operating in you to will and to work for the sake of His delight. All be doing without murmurings. This is hard for me. I can't do it. I cannot do it. I murmur all the time. I'm murmuring constantly. Constantly. I give myself over to God. I say, I'm sorry. You know, this is... But this is an exhortation to me. I'm not damned if I murmur, but I do. I'm just like, I have this undercurrent sometimes, a lot of times of this like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. I hate this life. This life sucks. This life's terrible. Why does the dishwasher not work? Why do my brakes go bad in the car? Murmuring all the time. But at the same time, I know it's of God. And at the same time, I'm thankful for everything. I'm still, the undercurrent of me is thankfulness. I'm still thankful for everything. And I know that this is all part of the operation to humble me. And I confess it to you. All be doing without murmurings. Paul, you know, that'd be nice, okay? I'll try. By keeping my focus on Christ and realizing the epicness. What's that word Vanessa used? Darn it. Substantial. Substantial. This calling is substantial. It's weighty. And I would love you to treat it like that and to walk worthily of it. I'll be doing without murmurings and reasonings. Reasoning is just say, what? It's like doubting God, questioning God. It's like, well, if God's sovereign, I can't understand why He would not take away my murmuring. That's reasoning. It's subjecting God's will and intention to your own interpretation, and wondering why God isn't as smart or as organized as you are. Why doesn't God have a better plan for your day than you have? You had a plan for your day. It went to smash. Well, if I were God, a lot of reasoning starts with, if I were God, a lot of reasoning starts with, why would God, many people say this to me, they reason as far as the lake of fire, which is the second death. Well, the second death. Why would God raise people only to send some to the second death? Hey, it doesn't matter. He just does it if their names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. He just does it. Don't reason in yourself. Believe what the Word says. So in all our imperfections, we're saved. And our imperfections are by design to keep us humble and to make us realize that God puts his treasure in earthen vessels that the glory may be of him and not of us. However, at the same time, while we understand that absolute truth and it doesn't go away, and God is operating in you like a hand inside a puppet, that does not go away, even though we're not conscious of it most of the time. Nevertheless, I must exhort you and myself, as Paul does, walk worthily of this calling. Don't murmur. Don't reason about things. Hear and heed the exhortation to be a good example, a good specimen of what a human being looks like who believes in the gospel of grace.